Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
To thank W.J. Pierce for creating and performing our music. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Thorn and Cross Haunted Nights Live. We're your hosts, Alistair Cross and Tamara Thorne. Hey, Tamara, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine.
We have such a great guest tonight. I can't wait.
We do.
The pre-show
We've been
talk
a lot of
was
fun in the studio already.
Good lady. Yes.
Yes.
We have. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Before we introduce that guest, I'm going to turn it back over to you, Tamara, and you can tell the listeners what we're working on now.
All right. I'm going to tell you guys about Ravencrest again, because even though we have two solos about to come out, one from each of us, we haven't written anything up. But we also have Ravencrest. And so I'm going to tell you about that. In a remote part of California, Ravencrest Manor, imported stone by stone from England more than two centuries ago, looms tall and terrifying, gathering its dark and unnatural powers and drawing those it wants as its own. In Exorcism, Book 3 of the Ravencrest Saga, something evil is stirring in the deep, dark waters of the estate's indoor pool, as ghostly jazz age parties fill the air with phantom music. Within the mansion, a maid is visited nightly by a demon lover, very well hung, and governess Belinda Moreland is haunted by the tormented spirit of Violet LeBlanc, a silent movie star who was driven mad in her prime and wants Belinda to help her in her search for justice. The Ravencrest Saga series is first released in serialized installments. Episodes 1 through 3 are available now on Amazon, and the fourth installment will appear just as soon as we finish it, which will be any minute now.
That's
and Alistair,
right.
Take over. Yeah.
That's right. And if you need to brush up on the Ravencrest Saga, the first two complete novels, The Ghosts of Ravencrest and The Witches of Ravencrest, are available in paperback or ebook at Amazon and wherever books are sold. So check it out. All right, very quickly, again, this is Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live. You can learn more about what we do at our websites, alistaircross.com and tamarathorn.com. You can visit our mutual blog at thornandcross.wordpress.com, or if you tweet, our handles are at crossalistair and at tamarathorn. You can also visit us on Facebook and give our Haunted Nights Live page a like. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at authorsontheair.com. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. All right, that said, as we mentioned, we were having a lot of fun with tonight's guest in the studio before the show, and he's a great guy, and we are excited to have him back. Peter Atkins. He is the author of the novels Morningstar, Big Thunder, Moontown, and many more, as well as the screenplays Hellraiser 2, Hellraiser 3, Hellraiser 4, and Wishmaster. His short fiction has appeared in such anthologies as The Museum of Horrors, Dark Delicacies 2, Hellbound Hearts, Gutshot, and the Alchemy Press Book of Pulp Heroes, and has been selected 8 times for one or more of the various year's best anthologies. He can be found on the web at peteratkins.blogspot.com. All right, Pete, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
How are you, and
welcome,
what have you been
welcome.
Up to?
Hey guys, thank you for having me back, and great to be back, and great to hear your voices.
Yeah.
And I guess just like Ravencrest Manor, I too have been imported stone by stone from England. So I'm thrilled by this connection to your work. This is great.
Nice.
Yeah. And we didn't mean to go so long without you. We were shocked when we realized you hadn't been back for a while. That has to not happen again.
Well,
we
that's
need
very,
you.
Very
need
kind
you
of you guys. But the thing is, that, I mean, there's plenty of other people, so you shouldn't go spoiling me. Because, I've been on twice before, actually, but or one and a half.
Yeah, but you should have been on 6 times by now.
Well, right? I agree.
You're
I'll
fun.
You what, I'll... You can, you know the way on local news. They go over to Jim for sports. So just, you know, give me the sports spot. But by the way,
right.
I know nothing whatsoever about sports of any kind, UK or
neither
American.
Do we. It's perfect.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Then I sound like a perfect fit to be your sports columnist. Anyway.
You are. You're absolutely perfect.
No, but you were kind enough to have me on with Glenn. I mean, you've had Glenn on.
Oh, yeah.
It's Todd. You've had me on my own. And but you had us on also as the Rolling Darkness Review, which was
great. So much fun. Yeah, Glenn, we talked to Glenn today, and he's coming in the end of March. Because we forgot about him, too.
Good.
Good, yeah. So, yeah.
Well,
and,
well,
are you guys ever thinking... Are you guys thinking of doing Rolling Darkness again, or is that a thing of the past now?
I think we should let it remain a thing of beauty that people can claim they said. You know the way everybody claims they went to Woodstock? And if all the people who claimed they were at Woodstock were actually there. So we figure we'll just let the myth of Rolling Dark continue to accrue people who never bothered showing up at the time. No, Glenn and I, obviously, very close friends, and we certainly intend to do projects of some nature together at some point in the future.
Okay.
We've been talking about a few things. And, you know, and we've... It's funny. Is it, Pete? Is it funny? Because so far you haven't said anything funny. What I mean is,
yes, you have.
It's strange, isn't it? We live increasingly in this sort of branded property world, and even at our minuscule level. I remember saying to a mutual friend, "Oh yeah, Glenn, I might do something, but it won't be Rolling Dark. It'll be," and I talked about some of the things we were talking about, and. The friend said, "What's wrong with you? You have a brand." And, of course, we don't have a brand, but except that it's like if, whatever tiny knowledge people have of you, I guess you should try and stick to. So, you know, the Rolling Darkness Review presents whatever the hell else it is we want to do.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, but... But yes, I'd be delighted to work with Glenn in any capacity at any point in the future. And indeed we will.
Oh, good. Yes, we'd love to have you both back at the same time. It's very riotous.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's great for Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, oh, yes, sign us up for the Halloween show. That would be great.
Okay.
I mean,
totally.
You don't know that I'm doing that right now, do you? I'm putting you in October.
Great.
You thought we were kidding.
No, we never kid about that.
No, I'm just going to start lobbying for live appearances so that we can come into the studio and eat Halloween cake. I'm frightening the kids. You have kids knocking on the door at the Halloween show, right?
Right.
We're in two different places, though. But, you know, we're both in L.A. We could just sort of...
Yeah, you know, Tamara, if I'm willing to make the trek, I think one of you could make the trek, too. Don't you think? Halloween
I
show?
I think both of us might.
All one
spot. All in one spot, there wouldn't be any talking over each other. Well, there would be, but it wouldn't be the same as this.
Right. Hey, but congratulations. Speaking of people who work together, I know you're both... much lauded authors in your own right, but you do these books together, and you're both going to be guests at a convention, like very, very soon, right?
Oh.
Next month? When is it?
financing fell through, and we're not going to pay our own way. So.
We made the big announcement.
And then it was like, we changed our mind.
Sure.
No.
Yeah.
Well,
we
decided we would
demonstrating the drawbacks of live shows once again.
Yeah, exactly.
We can say that it has spurred us to spend the money we had for that to get together and have a road trip around California again because we haven't done that.
That's right.
Yeah, all
do
the
you,
fun without the
do you go to
the
these
breath.
Things? Yeah, do you go to these things, Pete? We tend to both kind of like, as you can see, we're kind of about them. Do you go to them?
I certainly have done. I haven't done as many of the smaller local ones as perhaps I should or would like to. The big ones, like, you know, World Fantasy Convention or I guess even WorldCon, the big World SF, I don't really make an effort because I'm a crazy old bastard. But when they're in town or relatively local, I like to go. I'm not a big program participant. I mean, I have done them, but the great thing, as I'm sure you guys have found too, the great thing about conventions is, I guess the literal meaning of a convention, coming together, is you just, I like hanging in the bars and restaurants of the convention hotel with my friends.
Yeah.
So
the best
about them, the big panels, I mean, I've done them, you know, and sometimes they can be interesting, but generally I'm not that big a fan of that.
No, I did a lot early on and really, you know, with 200 people in the audience for a first time and all that. And it worked, and I'm glad I did it. But, oh, God, I'm such an introvert. I like hanging with friends and being on the radio.
But you can't see the audience, therefore they can't frighten you. Is that I'm not on the radio.
They didn't frighten me. Well, you know, on the radio, I don't have to sit with my legs neatly tucked together and I can scratch whatever I want.
Sure.
I like that. But no, audiences don't frighten me. I'm too ADD. I just start talking.
Right.
But they're exhausting. So, yeah, I like this. Small numbers.
Sure. Oh, yeah, the big... What the actual definition of extroverts and introverts is... people who gain energy from crowds and people who have energy sucked from them by crowds. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So we go out and do it for 2 hours and then go back to the room and just sit there and, you know, study your navel for 20 minutes to get re-energized.
Yeah.
Then you get home after 3 days and it takes a week to really get back into normal.
Sure.
Yeah.
I have this weird thing,
fun.
I guess, where it's like more like... like, you know, good quality cocaine as opposed to cheap speed. I can be totally energized for the 3 days of a convention. But then the sad coke come down realization on the Monday morning, oh, God, no, I'm an introvert. Oh, Christ. It sucks all the life out of me now.
Exactly.
So there's that.
I think most
of
us are.
Yeah. Yes.
Most of us are in,
Well, now, come on.
The actors,
we all know
actors.
Some people who really thrive on that crap, don't we? But
we're
not going to name any names. We're not going to name any names here. I was going to say, there's a local show here which isn't really a convention per se. I'm not even sure you guys have been, though. It's a lot of fun. I've been going for years. It's a one-day show that happens out in, well, technically in Glendale, but in Los Angeles every year, the Vintage Paperback Collectors Show, which is essentially one big dealer's room of people specializing in paperbacks and pulps, but there are certainly some hardcover dealers and to a small extent some movie memorabilia dealers as well. And they have guests, but there's no panel, there's no programming per se.
Mm-hmm.
They just wheel a bunch of us in hourly slots to sign any crap people want to bring up and present to them. And that's a relatively low-key, fun thing.
Yeah.
And basically, you're in a room full of books for 12 hours with people who like books as much as you do. So it's that's always fun.
See, that I could handle.
Yeah.
That I could handle.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Let me know. I'm very local. I would go there.
Well, first of all, you guys should... It's in 2 months' time, and you should definitely come along because it's fun, and you can buy fabulous, sleazy paperbacks from the 50s and 60s at relatively reasonable prices. But also, more to the point, you should meet Tom Lesser, the guy who organizes it, because you guys should get on the signing rotation. Though I have to warn you, Tom was kind enough to put me on the sort of, you know, semi-permanent guest list a few years back, and I was very touched and flattered, but also a little disappointed because I went every year anyway just as a punter, just so I could go in the room and browse the paperbacks. And once you're on the guest list, you sort of, you still get a little browsing time, but it's like, here's your slot, now you're stuck with these other authors. so you might want to enjoy it at least once without.
Maybe Alistair, that's when you should come. Yeah, that would be fun.
You know what? I was thinking the
Alistair
same thing.
And I could come
Why
with
not?
You and Glenn.
You said it's about 2 months away. I was thinking because we mm-hmm. really were when the whole we were going to go to when that changed. We were like, mm-hmm. you know what? We need to do something anyway. You know, and so
together.
We might really do that.
Yeah.
Oh,
can we go with you and Glenn?
I put a link up to it recently on my Twitter thing. But I can email you guys once we finish the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, March 24th at the convention center in Glendale is great.
Yeah, it is.
Nice.
Wow, that would be fun. That's books.
That would
be. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you like to read?
I should plug it while I'm there.
First
started going, it was great because mm-hmm. a lot of legendary – because I am so old that a lot of legendary people were still alive when I first started going. Ray Bradbury uh-huh. went every year, for example. George Clinton Johnson was always there. Bill Nolan, mm-hmm. who turns 91 next month, is always there and is going to be there again this year. And about – I'm trying to think, it feels like it was 7 years ago, but it was probably 19 years ago. I still smoked in those days, and I stepped outside at the show about 19 years ago, and I was having a ciggy, and there was mm-hmm. an older gentleman, sort of, well, you know, tough-looking guy, big, crew-cut hair, and I looked over, and I thought, fucking hell, that's Mickey Spillane.
Oh, wow.
Mickey Spillane was at the show. And the thing is, I'm not even that big a fan of Mickey Spillane's crime
Mickey
fiction.
Spillane.
But it was like, uh-huh. it was literally like an elder god was still walking the earth. It was like, wow, I've heard of this guy since I'm 7 years old. And he's just here for this one-day show. It was terrific. And a lot of the old paperback guys used to do it. Mike Avalone, I'm going uh-huh. blank, but, you know, lots of crime and horror guys. A. Van Vogt was there every year.
Wow.
So, and now Bill, of course, is the last man standing of that generation. And but you've got your Larry Niven and Dennis Etchison's of the...
Oh, Dennis, I haven't
of
seen
the
Dennis.
Next, Dennis is there every year. Yeah, you should come by and say hello to him, if nothing else. And... Yeah, so that, you know, they've got those guys in their 70s, the Nibbons and the Etchisons. And then, you know, the sad truth is that those of us who think we're still the Young Turks, like me and Dave Scow and Christoph Faust, we're the old
I'm in your generation,
now. We're,
too.
We're like 50-year-olds who are next in line
you
to
and
be
I,
the ones who...
You, that's right, but you and I both have young collaborators. We did it right.
there you go. Yes. Like Elizabeth Bathory, we quietly suck off their energy and hope they don't notice.
That's right.
I have been really tired lately.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
oh, you're young. You'll refresh
and
yourself.
I'll
refresh. You know what, though?
Alistair?
I love that you are still, after everything that you've accomplished and the people that you've met, that you're still kind of starstruck when, you know, like a story like that. Because mm-hmm. you grew up, you were good old friends with Clive Barker. I mean, come on.
Sure.
I mean, that's cool. That's cool. And you're still...
Yeah.
Yes, but
that's cool.
Sure. Clive is a huge star, but you have to remember, when I knew him, he wasn't Clive Barker. He was just Clive, you know, and...
Right.
Yeah, wow. The one that I met that just blew me away, and I wasn't published yet, and I never asked for autographs or anything, but I loved him so much, I introduced myself, was Our Lady of Darkness, Fritz Leiber.
Oh, Fritz Leiber, sure. Is it Leiber or Leiber?
I don't know. It could
be
Leiber.
Neither do I. And, you know, we should know because we just mentioned Dennis Etchison. You've met Chris,
right?
Dennis's wife. Fritz was her godfather.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So she would know how to pronounce his last name. Oh, and... Listeners, if you think we're incredibly ignorant for people who make their living using words, Fritz's last name is spelled L-E-I-B-E-R, But in the back of my mind, I'm told it's pronounced the way you don't expect it to be pronounced. Anyway, who cares? His name is Fritz Leiber, and yeah, he wrote he wrote science fiction, horror, fantasy, and he was fantastic. Our Lady of Darkness is great. Mm-hmm. Conjure Wife is great. He wrote, well, you know, Ramsey Campbell always cites Fritz's 1948 story Smoke Ghost as really the start of the modernist urban horror, bringing the old horrors into cityscapes.
Yeah.
Which certainly Ramsey went on to be a master of.
Our Lady of Darkness. Holy cow.
Well, right. It really is the crowning of that particular strand in in Fritz's
did
stuff.
Did you read that yet, Alistair? I know you read Conjure Wife, or did you read Our Lady of Darkness?
I did Conjure Wife and Our Lady of Darkness, yes.
Oh, good.
Those are the only two that I've read of his, though. I've not read anything else, and it was a while back.
Those
are
my
things. I don't really remember too well.
And and I looked it up. It's Leiber with a long I.
It is Leiber. Leiber.
Okay.
Yeah.
Leiber.
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 So, Pete, what have you been working on? Is there anything on the horizon right now that you're in the middle of or wanting to work on? What's going on?
Well, same old, same old, really. I mean, I think last time I was on, I made the truthful, if humorous observation that, you know, young writers need to have my career in reverse because I started in the movies, which pays really well, and then I did a couple of novels, which pays okay. And for the last 10 years, I've been writing exclusively short stories, which, as we all know, pays for shit. So, I've been getting the best reviews of my life and I'm really enjoying it. So, I have been doing, I'm trying to think if I had a couple out last year. I'm very slow, I'm very lazy. but as when people ask when's the next book out, I usually reply, well, I'm inching my way glacially towards the next collection. And I think because, you know, my last collection came out in the U.S. only a year and a half ago. But so I like to imply that it's a recent book, but the U.K. edition was 5 years before that. So, and that basically collected the short fiction from God knows when. I don't know, like 1991 to 2010 or whatever. So I'm almost at the point, you know, I'm sure I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. One of the great things about collections as opposed to novels is you can get an awful lot of extra white space in a collection.
Right.
So whereas you could never get a, 48,000 word novel past an agent or a publisher these days. But once you get to like 48,000-50,000 words in a collection, you can pretty much make that look like a book. You know, give each story a nice separate title page. Make sure the story ends on a left-hand page so you can then have a blank page, flip it over, then another blank page. And somehow, magically, you can get like a 240-page book out of 48,000 words. So I'm almost at the point where I can cheat. I think if a couple more stories and I've got what no self-respecting novelist would call a book-length manuscript, but I'll be putting it out as a collection.
That's amazing.
You know what? You could always put in a whole bunch of thank yous. Go back and just thank everybody for
and
everything.
Quotes.
You could get three, four, five pages out of that.
That's right. And then ask a particularly loquacious friend for an introduction. And instead of doing the usual thing of, Jesus Christ, this is longer than my stories, it's like, no, feel free, write more.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's our problem. Neither one of us will write short stories. We tried once together to start. It turned into a novel. And stay down to 100,000 words, it doesn't work. Yeah, we're both coming in around 140 on our new novels. And
that's how our whole collaboration
began. We just can't shut up.
Let's write a short story, and it just turned into a book, and then it turned into another book and another book. It just kept going and going, and we're like, well, I guess we don't write short stories. That's all right.
No.
I think with that, there are certainly people who are more than competent at both, but I think there are more writers who are good at one rather than the other. I mean, you know, not exclusively. But I think there are sort of natural novelists and natural short story writers. And the thing is, you say, oh, we had an idea for a short story, but it turned into a novel. But is that really true? Because it tends to be, doesn't it, that the nature of the idea or the germ, you know, whatever it is, that's the grit in the oyster that will eventually produce the pearl of your novel, is whatever that is, they're different. If you get an idea that's going to be a novel, it's going to be a novel. The ideas themselves are sort of different, aren't they? Or not? I mean, tell me, do you really mean you had an idea and you thought it was a short story, but it mutated?
Yeah.
Or was it really an idea for a novel?
We are both character writers. Yeah, tell him.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we did.
The characters
really
take over.
We really did say a short story. And this was the first thing that we ever wrote together. And we kind of each bring our own ideas or characters, I think, is the big thing for us, because we both write a lot of characters. And, you know, the characters started showing up, and I had some, and she had some, and then we're like, okay, this is a novella. That's all right, it can be a novella. And then it just kept going. And then they just kept talking. It's true. And you know what? Our first book, The Cliff House Haunting, we ended up cutting. Mm-hmm. Two or three entire character threads that added up to about 50,000 words we ended up cutting out of that book.
To get it down to 140. All those words, my God.
We run off with the typewriter,
So needless to say, I don't think short stories are just, it just doesn't, it just, it grows.
No, we admire people who can write them.
We can't contain it. It's like, okay, well, I don't know. Yeah, it baffles me. I admire it.
Yeah, those characters start telling you what they're thinking and doing, and then we have to write about them, and then there's, you know, and the secondary characters always come in and start, one or two of them will take over.
Curb them. Who do they think they are? They're not the author.
No, right? We try.
They kind of are the boss.
I've seen your book covers. I thought you guys were into S&M. Just, you know, let them know who's the dom and who's the sub. Come on.
But
it's
we're
totally
trying to like
true.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kidding, of course, because whatever length you write as, that's the great thing, isn't it? When the characters take over, that first moment when somebody does something that you didn't intend them to do is really when the story or the novel comes alive very often.
Yep,
exactly.
We totally get that.
Chelsea Quinn Yarbrough, she told me a long time ago when I was asking her questions when I was a young writer, and she said that one of the times the characters would always take over, and that was a good thing. And she was horrified when one of her characters in one of her early count books insisted on running in and letting the horses out of the barn that was on fire. And she said, I told him he was going to die if he did it, and he died, and I had all these things planned for him, but I couldn't do anything about it. It was his choice. And I took that to heart, and I live by that.
Right. You know, it's interesting because, again, before I was a writer, I used to hear writers say stuff like that, and I used to think, what fucking bullshit. What is
So did I.
The characters take over. They just decide. I didn't know what was going to happen in chapter 14, and I'd think, bollocks. But astonishingly, it turns out to actually be true. And far from being a problem or nonsense, it is very often where the magic happens. So,
It is.
It comes to life.
The same thing, and I actually thought that it sounded, because I, exact same story, I heard it, and I thought, whatever. I even thought it sounded kind of pretentious. I thought,
of course.
You know,
well, yeah.
They talk to you.
You've met writers,
your voices,
right? Like, you've met writers.
Yeah.
What a bunch of dicks. Jesus.
But now that we've started doing it, now that I do it, that's the way it works. Mm-hmm. And I can't. I've tried really strict outlining, and that's good. But I have to just be okay with the fact that it's going to go kind of wherever it's going to go. As long as it goes somewhere good, mm-hmm. I'm happy with it. And as long as I let that happen, it usually goes somewhere
right.
good.
Right.
Now what happens to your short stories, though? That way.
How do you
control your short stories? Or do you? You
must. I don't. No, I mean, it's that weird thing, isn't it? Whether in any branch of the arts, I think, you know, if you're writing a piece of music, if you're painting a picture, if you're writing a story, if you're writing a poem, whatever it is, the truth is, it's that bizarre mix of intellectual control and unconscious inspiration, or whatever you want to call it. Because again, you know, like you, Alistair, I dread the pretentiousness coming in when you say things
right.
like that. But it is. It's the balance between, you know, let the muse free, let the shit flow. It is a balance between instinct and intellect, I think. And I think in a way, you know, we're all perfectly proud of how terribly smart we are, and that's a good thing. But you really don't want to let your intellect get in the way, at least on a first draft. And then it's like, so you want to let the animals loose, or let the kids loose. Let the kids loose, and then let the adults in to tidy the place up or something.
Right.
So
right.
I mean, that's how I would describe that little dynamic between the unfettered imagination and the controlling intelligence, I guess.
Right. I think that's a great way to put it. I do. You talked about, you said early in your career you started in you know, movies and TV, and of course you wrote the screenplays for what I consider to be the best Hellraiser movies.
God bless you. See, this is why I like to be on your show. No, I'm sorry.
But I mean it.
Ahead.
I mean it. I really do. I mean it. I don't want to disrespect anyone else, but I remember, you know, kind of thinking, I don't really see what the big deal is until I saw 2, 3, 4. But anyway, the point is, what I'm getting at is I think you really shine at that. You really do. And I'm wondering if there's do you have any plans, or is there any possibility of you returning to screenwriting?
No.
No.
Here's the thing, Alistair. I've got some very sad news for you, and it will come as a great surprise to you and to everybody, I'm sure. Do you know that ageism exists in the film industry? Aren't you stunned to hear that? It wasn't so much that I gave up screenwriting as screenwriting gave me up. Now, clearly, there are plenty of A-listers my age who continue to work, but there's a sort of natural cutoff point for the B-C and D-listers, partly because they're only interested in money. You know, it's like they don't care.
Yeah.
If you can make them money, that they're all for it. So it's not a conscious ageism, but the attrition rate. This is very inside baseball. I'm sorry if we're boring your listeners, but the attrition rate of the executives at the film companies is so high that, you know, the average or median age of executives, there's very few of them survive into their 30s. So it's a young culture, as it should be. There's nothing wrong with that at all. And the truth is, they don't want granddad sitting on the other side of the desk telling them how things should be. I don't know. Look, I was working in I mean, the last time I was produced in a movie that I care to acknowledge was 20 years ago. Something came out a few years ago that we will draw a veil over. But I was working until, 2009, 2010. Because, as you know, a lot of screenwriters make a very good living while very rarely getting produced. Even after my last good production, I had several gigs. So it wasn't that long ago that that I stopped doing that. But I love the movies. And I also love collaborative art. I got to be honest, I am most happy doing what I do now, just, writing. No team to have to argue with or persuade to just do that. But
yeah.
I started in rock bands and fringe theater 40 years ago. He says that out loud, my God! More than 45 years ago. And I played in bands, and I was, with Clive and Doug in Dog Company. As a very young person, I was 17, 18. And I love group activities. I loved being in bands. I loved working in theater and working in the movies because I was very lucky. I wasn't just a screenwriter who handed the script over and then the filmmakers made the movie. In nearly all of the movies I was lucky enough to get produced from my scripts, they kept me around, for whatever reason. They liked the cut of my jib. They'd occasionally even pay me to stick around and be on set throughout. And it just reminded me of the old days in theater and with music, because it's a bunch of talented, enthusiastic people doing their best to, like Judy and Mickey, let's do the show right here. And so I love group art. I love participating in it. I like hanging out with fellow practitioners. So I'm certainly not bad-mouthing the movies or resenting the time I spent there. But I'd rather be writing these elegant, quirky little ghost stories on my manual typewriter,
Right.
No manual typewriter. That's all nonsense. Just a joke.
Yeah. Okay, I was going to ask.
No, Tamara, did you ever go to Harlan's house?
Yes.
Harlan Ellison?
He showed me his typewriter.
I know you knew him, did I. And, he was a manual typewriter guy to the end.
Yeah.
He had that one closet. Dear listeners, we're talking about the great and sadly recently lost to us Harlan Ellison, who died last year, had people who loved him and had people who hated him, and he had people he loved and he had people he hated, and by Christ, he let you know it. He was certainly one of a kind, but he literally had a closet full of, I think last time I was there, there were nine. I can't remember the model number, but his favorite manual typewriter. He smelt the winds of change a-coming. So he bought like 25 of these fucking things in 1987 or whatever it was, so that when he drove another one to death, he could just open the closet and pull the next Underwood or whatever the hell it is So.
Oh, more typewriters than Stanley Kubrick in The Shining.
God bless the quirky coming.
Oh, he was great. Yeah. And even when he got mad and swore at you, I couldn't get I was running one con that was Redondo Beach HWA, and I couldn't get Erie, Indiana was just coming out, and he wanted to have a screen in the banquet room, and I couldn't get one. All I could get was a TV in his room. And he swore at me in front of my editor. He swore at me in front of my editor, who went to his editor, who was the boss, and she said she was going to do some reprints, and decided that was just wasn't okay. And I go, no, I like him. It's okay. He swears at everybody.
This is how we know we're his friend. He's screaming at us.
Really? Yes. Yeah. He took a shine to me because I was short, and I was there with Doug Clegg, who's tall. He's like you. And,
he loved Doug. And also,
yeah.
I suspect, I wasn't there at the moment, but I suspect that you probably didn't take his shit, which was the way to Harlan's heart. I think it's not a nice trait, test people by being mean, but he was old school in that way. If you gave it right back to him, he had that sort of street guy thing of,
respect. he came out, his wife opened the door, and he came out and stood behind that little foyer thing where he couldn't see anything but his chest, which was naked, and he made sure we saw his naked feet and leg, and he stood there and talked to us, and we're just going, oh yeah, hi, and he waited for the longest time, obviously trying to upset us, and he finally came out and he had Donald Duck shorts on that but we wouldn't have blinked if he had nothing on. We knew about Harlan.
You can't fold.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, but he was obviously a huge legendary talent, and I never had a crossword with him. He was very nice to me.
Yeah.
And So
yeah,
all
he was
right,
mostly nice to me.
Yeah, not that he didn't give me shit. Like I say, that was his fuel. That's what drove him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He made a girl at the registration desk in the hotel cry. I overheard him doing it, and I was treasure at the time. After he walked away, she's trying to get her shit together, and she's crying. So I walked up and apologized to her for his behavior on behalf of HWA.
Right.
I always said if Harlan ever found out, I'd really get sore. I really enjoyed doing it, I got to tell you. That poor girl.
Well, I must admit, I don't like, it is that sort of pick on someone your own size and or stature syndrome. I don't like it when, don't do it to civilians. That's
exactly. Yeah. Now, he has a little man syndrome going on, but that was okay. That just made it cuter.
Well, it did. And, he was the first one to make jokes about that himself.
Yeah.
Because I think he knew that he was a giant inside. And and he wanted to make the world realize that. So, it's understandable.
Yeah, he was one of my heroes when I was a teenager. And at the time, I'd read these things he wrote about how he'd send bricks to producers and of TV shows when he was upset. And then the other day I see the thing in the White House saying that we should send bricks to, somebody in Congress or something to show her. And I think, wow, when I was 17, I even knew that was kind of juvenile, even though I thought it was funny. But that was a writer.
Yeah.
Just amazing. He had dead rats, too, I think. Or at least he said he did. And I'll bet he did. But I was just enamored. I'd go see him at UCLA. I never introduced myself, though. I wasn't published yet. I was too young. But, he was great, and I loved his writing. I always had a dictionary out when I was reading him, too. I learned all my Jewish slang from him.
Right.
Yeah, and Mel Brooks, but that's another story. Wow. Ooh, we're running way over.
We should just get
back together and do this again.
You guys should just stop talking. I mean, my God,
I know, right?
Life to live.
What have you? Do you have more to say? We'll be quiet while you talk.
No. Oh, I didn't mean you. I meant we should all stop talking. I'm just saying, blame me for it running on.
We never blame you.
I have
we aren't watching
much,
the clock.
I have as much or as little to say as you would like me to have, so I can I can certainly keep talking. But no, I'm aware that you're part of. I mean, you're part of a network now, and I know. I know, in the old indie days, back when you cared about your guests and your listeners instead of your bottom line and your network returns.
And our scary producer, she might yell at us.
Exactly. Let's, for God's sake, fit in your time slot, sure.
Well,
I pulled off a post-it earlier this afternoon and wrote like 7 items down, and we've got through one of them. Which is in fact the opposite of a complaint. It is a testament to the fun and interesting nature of your conversation. So next time I'll know. Aww. I needn't even bother making the post-it. So that's great.
Okay. Well, keep the post-it, and I think we should have you back once a season. So for this, what's the next season? This is winter, so there's a spring show coming up. We'll talk to you about it.
We'll talk
about the next one. We can milk this.
Yeah, you're one of our favorites. We love having you.
Yes,
and
you
we've
are.
We've had lots of ideas for different, you know, kinds of things that we kind of want to do with the show, you know, like theme shows
specialty
where
shows.
We talk about it doesn't
mm-hmm.
matter. You know, like specialty shows.
Yeah.
So we're not stuck to like, if you have a book coming out then you can come on and pimp it. We can talk about anything. We can do anything. So keep writing
short stories would be one. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, writing screenplays, short stories. Yes.
Yeah, and
I'd love to have you.
God bless you.
Cool.
Thank you. It's been lovely as always. Can I just say you were kind enough to give the website address, but also if people care to. And they can spot the news then. I also tweet at LimeyBastard55.
Oh, yes.
So if people want to find me on there.
You are great on Twitter. We love you there.
Thank
you very much. As are
we
you guys. Although, Alistair, a lot of not safe for work shit goes up on your feed,
it's
mate.
True.
It's true.
It's
true.
I
mean, it's a good job.
So
I don't work.
You know what? I've been on Facebook for a long time, and Facebook is where you have your family, your friends, and, you know, I'm always a little cautious about what I post. And then I kept hearing, you should get on Twitter, and I tried, and I'm like, I don't know. And then I started posting offensive material, and I'm like, this is fun. Mm-hmm. So
it is.
Suddenly, oh, this is the frat house. Okay.
yeah, this is why it's so fun. But I notice you're not really on Facebook, are you, other than the Rolling Darkness review?
This is the Rolling Dark page, which Glenn and I share. I mean... And we you said, we try and keep that sort of professionally related, like, you know, this is happening, this is happening. But
Twitter,
thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah.
If people are, for whatever reason, interested, they could do that as well. On Facebook, they could find the Rolling Darkness Review, which is essentially a page for me and Glenn. And as I say on Twitter, LimeyBastard55. Think how much fun, listeners, you'll have that first time you type search LimeyBastard. You'll enjoy typing.
Yeah.
And
so it's number 55.
Yeah, LimeyBastard.
Yep. LimeyBastard55.
Yes. And you are highly entertaining.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
okay,
we
thank
will be
you guys.
In touch, and we will have you back.
Very soon.
Yeah, one more time, let me just remind everybody that they can find you at peteratkins.blogspot.com. You can follow him at Twitter at @LimeyBastard55, and you can put in a search for Rolling Darkness Review on Facebook, and that's a fun page. That's Peter Atkins and Glenn Hirschberg. And I think that's about it. We look forward to having you back, of course.
We do.
Well,
we
thank
do.
You, guys. I mean, the time flies by. It really does. So, which really
it
is
does.
A tribute to you as hosts. That's the magic.
And you as a guest.
No.
Yeah.
You as a guest.
We'll make more
sure,
magic together
sure.
soon.
How sick are you making your listeners right now? They're like turning it down. These fucking guys. My God. What a circle jerk.
We don't care.
No.
That's the attitude.
Yep. All right. Well,
thank
we'll
you.
Be in touch,
I
really think we should consider this thing that's going on in Glendale in a few months. So we'll be in touch.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'll send you a link to it. Sure.
Yes,
yeah.
Do,
we'll
do.
Send you
all
a
right.
permanent podcast link tomorrow too. So.
Okie doke.
We'll be in touch.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Thank you guys
for being on.
Oh, thank
and
you.
You're welcome. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. This is Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live. And until next week, we wish you haunted nights.
And sweet screams.
Thank you for listening.
Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.